Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. Wonderful to see you all. I hope you had a wonderful Hanukkah. We spoke about Hanukkah last week, and we get to move on. So we'll get to do this 2 weeks in a row. I want to share with you something that I found. My wife very rarely will buy me Svarim, will buy me Jewish texts, Jewish books. She knows that's my department and I like certain things. But she gifted me the other day a set of books that were on the Parsha from Rabbi, his name was Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. He was the head, the dean of the Mir Yeshiva in New York. I never attended it, but she's been listening, since the war began in Israel. Here's Eric. We're gonna leave him in there.
Put them in the back row.
There we go.
Well,
Here we go. So, what do you call it? So, whatever, she gifted it to me, and I'm reading it. Mr. Hoffman, you're late. Please
hey.
take a seat in the back.
Okay, I will. I'm in the
Anyway,
All
she
right.
gifted me. I never attended that yeshiva, but since the war, in the when she's cooking for Shabbos or working in the mornings before she goes to work, cleaning up the house or whatever it is. She decided she's not going to watch her cooking shows or whatever. She's going to listen to a Torah class in the morning. So she's been listening to this particular rabbi, and he keeps quoting this book. And every time she hears him tell over a nice thought, she goes, "Oh, my husband would like that." And then she'd listen to another one. She goes, "Man, I think Tzvi would like that one too." So she just went ahead and she bought the book. I have to share one of the thoughts that he had on yesterday's Torah reading. I thought it was so fabulous. Let's review for a moment. In yesterday's Torah reading, Parshas Miketz, we had the famous dreams of Pharaoh. Pharaoh has these dreams. Let's just paint the picture again. Everybody here knows it, but Joseph has already been imprisoned. He's been framed for the crime against Mrs. Potiphar, who had the hots for him, and he wants no part of it. And so he's in prison now. He interprets the dream of the wine steward and he interprets the dream of the baker. And exactly as he predicted, that's what happens. And as this wine steward is leaving, Joseph asks of him, "Please remember me and mention me to Pharaoh." Of course, he doesn't do it until Pharaoh has a dream. After the 2 years since Joseph interpreted the dream and asked the wine steward to remember him, 2 years later, Pharaoh has these dreams. And they're two dreams. One dream is about these fat cows and the skinny cows, and the skinny cows eat the fat cows and they don't put on any weight, pretty much our metabolism when we're teenagers. But then you have the second dream about the stalks of wheat and bow. Okay, you get the whole story. The wimpy ones again consume the good ones. And Yosef interprets the dreams, and Pharaoh is amazed and he appoints him as the viceroy. If you look carefully at the dreams themselves, you have to ask yourself, how did Yosef know what the interpretation was? Obviously, I think it goes without saying, but God gave him the wisdom to understand the dreams. But there has to be some indication within the dreams itself. What was so indicative? If you read them carefully, you find something very strange. And I'll just point out what Rav Birnbaum does. He says, "Behold," this is Pharaoh telling over the dream to Joseph. "V'hineh, sheva paros acheros olos." And then afterwards, another seven cows arose min hayar, from the river. Ra'os marev v'dakos basar. They were meekly and weakly looking, and they were very thin. Vatamodna etzel haparos al svasayar, and they stood next to the other cows, the fat cows, on the bank of the river. How does Joseph interpret the seven fat cows? That represents what?
Seven
Years
good.
of plenty.
7 years of plenty. And the seven skinny cows, that's the 7 years of famine. How does Joseph interpret it, though? First, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, and afterwards comes the 7 years of famine. Correct? Do I have that right? That's the interpretation. And all of a sudden, Pharaoh goes, "Wow, this guy's a genius. Nobody can interpret it like this." Really? If I gave you this as your exam, and I gave you this crazy dream that I have about the fat cows and the skinny cows and the rat, how hard is it to come up? This is not rocket science. That's super difficult to read into it. What was Pharaoh so amazed about, number one? And number two, the dream has it. Let's be very careful. The dream is that the two sets of cows occurred at the same time, didn't they? The fat cows and the skinny cows were next to each other on the riverbank. Not the case of first you had fat cows and they died, and then you had skinny cows who were after them. That's not the way the dream goes. The dream was the fat cows were there, then the skinny cows were right next to them at the same time, and the skinny cows eat the fat cows. And yet Joseph's interpretation is that they were not at the same time. First 7 years of plenty, and they're over. And only afterwards you get 7 years of famine. So it's not even, the interpretation is not even true to the dream. Do you ever wonder about, did you ever see that before? Did you notice that? Be honest. I never noticed that before. Never. Until I saw this on Friday. I think it's a brilliant question. What? The dream, the interpretation does not match the dream. Jimmy, you hear what I'm telling you? This is to me what in yeshiva we used to call a bomb question. This is one that it's going to shake up the whole understanding of the story. Anybody want to suggest an answer?
Well, I heard today in Hal Tannenbaum's eulogy, the rabbi's talking about, you know, how he didn't kind of compared it to Yosef when he answered Pharaoh. He said, you know, I heard you're a big dream interpreter. And he says, you know, interpret my dream. He says, I'm reading in Hebrew. He says, Bil Adi Elokim Yaneh.
Right.
It wasn't him. The answer was God, Hashem. So it's only Hashem that knows here.
I'm with you. I agree 100%. But if it was just a matter of telling me the story and the punchline is God gave Joseph the wisdom to interpret it, the Torah doesn't have to tell us the details of the dream. Let it be, the Torah will say, Pharaoh had dreams. Nobody could interpret it. Joseph proposed an answer, an interpretation, and Pharaoh was so impressed, and he said, wow, you're a genius. And he said, no, Bil Adai, it's only God who gave me. That point could have gotten across without giving me the details of the story. Right? I don't need the details. And if you're going to give me the details, then be true to the details. This is Rav Birnbaum's question. Mr. Ebner, you always have some take on these kind of things.
Not this time. Sorry
really?
About that.
I'm you must be out of practice.
I guess so.
Rabbi, I'm gonna try.
Go for it, Susan.
Well, it could be because it's not just Egypt. It's all of the land outside of Egypt, too. So you have that, you know, the rest of the land may not be having a plenty, or they might, but they might not realize it. So they're just going to go about their daily life and, I guess, reap what they sow, just eat everything. Whereas, you know, what Joseph did was he made sure we have plenty, we're going to save. So maybe that's why they're there at the same time. It's not just Egypt, it's everybody else, too.
Okay.
So the skinny cows are everybody else.
Okay, we're going to work with that. I think there's more to it, but I think you're going in the right direction. Anybody else want to propose something, or I'll just tell you what Birnbaum writes. Such
the
a
thing group. that I had learned somewhere that the impressive thing about his dream was not that there was going to be years of famine and years of feast, but that he made, in addition to that, he made a recommendation on planning on how to plan for this, and that was to save every, you know, save your food now for the 7 years of famine. That was what was impressive about his dream, and the advice that he gave to Pharaoh was to do that, and that's why he stood out.
Okay, so it's interesting you say that. That's very interesting, Rick, Because the truth of the matter is, one can even ask it as a question. Meaning, Pharaoh asked Joseph to do one thing. He gave him one job, and that is interpret the dreams, which is what Joseph did. Except Joseph went further, and he went ahead, and he had the chutzpah, if I can use the term, he had the chutzpah to give advice to Paro how to do it. Like, you're just a little guy who was just taken out of prison. Pharaoh's doing you the biggest favor, giving you an opportunity. If I were in his shoes, I would just make a good impression, interpret the dreams, and let Pharaoh do what he needs to do. Where do I come off offering him this advice and saying, you know what you need to do? You need to appoint somebody who is a chacham and another and a wise guy. Yeah, where do you get off giving that kind of advice? But Rav Birnbaum, Rick, says your point, and that's the key to all of this. If he says it like this, the entire theme of what's going on with Yosef interpreting Pharaoh's dreams is one message, and that is a phrase that we learned in Pirkei Avos. In Ethics of the Fathers, we learned, it asks a question. Ezehu chacham, who is considered wise? So in Pirkei Avos, it actually has the phrase, halomed mikol adam, someone who learns from everyone. But there's another place in the Talmud, in Tractate Tamid, where it phrases it a little differently. And it says, Ezehu chacham, who is considered wise? Haroa et hanolad. The literal translation means one who can see that which is born. That's the literal. But what it means is someone who can contemplate the consequences of their actions. You see what will come of it, what will be born if I make whatever decision I make. You want to know somebody who's wise, someone who can take into consideration what the ripple effect, what the consequences of my actions will be. That's truly a wise person. The fool is the one who only looks at the here and now, because all I care about is what I see right in front of me. What's it going to be later on? How that's going to impact? Nah, whatever. That's foolish. That's short-sighted. A chacham, a wise individual, is someone who can see the consequences of their actions. Rav Birnbaum says like this. He says the truth of the matter is everybody was grappling with Pharaoh's dream because they couldn't reconcile how do you have both fat cows and skinny cows at the same time. If they mean years of feast, years of plenty, and years of famine, they don't coincide. They don't go together. Unless we use Susan's idea of one's talking Egypt and one's talking outside. But in the Torah, it's not that way. From the Torah, it's implied that in Egypt, there's years of feast and plenty, and unrelated years later is where the famine is. But how do the two happen at the same time? Nobody on Pharaoh's cabinet could come up with this kind of interpretation. Comes along Joseph and he says, I'm going to teach you what this means. What it means is a philosophy in life. That even when you are experiencing years of plenty, knowing full well that the years of famine are coming, you have to have your eyes in the front of your head. Look beyond the here and now. Think, how is this going to play out? If we don't strategize now in the years of plenty, we're doomed for the years of famine. So even during the years of plenty, they are already feeling, because they start storing food for the years of famine. Meaning the two do coexist. During the years of plenty, they're already dealing with the years of famine. None of his interpreters, none of his wise men could come up with that concept, because it's a foreign ideal to them. In the non-Torah world, you think about the here and now. Everything is about what can I get now. In today's world, gentlemen and ladies, you know this to be true. We live in a world with instant gratification. It's all about what is it for me now? What's going to be? I don't know. I don't care. That's how we get to the trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, because everybody just kicks the can down the road. What's it going to do for the inflation? What's it going to do for the whatever? Social Security's running out of money. Whatever. I mean, yeah, I'm concerned about it, and I'll come up with a story. Farfig Nugent. It just gets kicked down the road because it's all about what I need now. A Torah perspective is a Zehu Chacham. Who's truly wise? Keep your eye a little bit down the road. It's not just about the here and now. One of the greatest insights that my father, Zichrono Livracha, gave to me when he was teaching me to drive a car. He says, if you really want to navigate the road, don't look right at the edge of your hood. Don't look at the road right there. Your eyes should be further down so that you see when the curve is coming. Not when you get there. Your eyes have to be a little bit farther down the road to see how it lays out. Are there traffic patterns building? You have to be able to see a little bit beyond. Yosef understood that concept. And therefore, when Pharaoh presented his dream of fat cows and skinny cows at the same time, yeah, Yosef interpreted it seeing that kind of vision. And Pharaoh says, wow, I never heard such a concept before. Planning like that? And that explains why Rick is right. And that is part of what Yosef wants to impress upon Pharaoh is he finishes the thought. If you want the interpretation of the dream to become real, then go ahead and appoint a chacham. If you think about it, what he should have said is hire AWS. Go hire a logistic genius. That's what you need, a strategist who can go ahead and just technically, okay, every time we have food, everybody has to give 10%, and we're going to have this storehouse and that storehouse, and we'll get Jeff Bezos, and he'll figure out how to do all the logistics. And that's what he really needs, a logistics guy. No, says Yosef, you need a chacham, someone who not only can see a little bit down the road, but he has to feel he's all in now to see that for the future. That's a world of difference. That's how the two can reconcile and be together. And that's why immediately when Pharaoh says to Joseph, you're the guy perfect for this because you have that vision, immediately the pasuk says, Yosef started collecting all the food. Dechol hayom, harbe ma'od. He collected a boatload of food. Why? Because if you don't do it now, you can't plan for the future when it's already here. That's the message that's going on here. If you think about it, the truth of the matter is that is the Torah philosophy on life. That is our philosophy. When we are faced with a challenge in the here and now, the Torah teaches us, don't look at it in a vacuum. What's for the right here and right now? How should I make my decisions? Is this the right decision? Is that, well, what are the implications going forward? Is it just, you know, you can take a silly example of doing, doing a mitzvah now or doing a transgression now. Okay, you do a transgression. But sometimes you get these decisions, the ramifications are tremendous. What's the role model I want to set for my children? Right? Those have major implications. It's not just whether I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. What are my kids going to learn from it? Is this a lesson that they're going to pick up on? Those are big ramifications. Deciding where to live, how to live, how to live our life. What's the message that we teach how we deal with our money? You know, the Talmud says that you can tell the true nature of a person with three things. It's a play on words. Bikiso, bikaso, ubikoso. Bikiso means with his wallet, how a person deals with money. Bikaso, with his anger, how a person deals with stress, how they deal with it. And ubikoso is with this cup of wine when he's inebriated. You get to see the inside of a person. What is the true nature of the person? Well, let's see. When you're under those circumstances, what are the messages that we give to our children, to our family? That's that. You have to have your eye to the future. Isn't that the idea that we live our world, our life in this world of Olam Hazeh, this world? Why? Because we have an eye towards what, Irv? Towards
Olam Haba.
Olam Haba, the world to come. I make my decisions here in this world with an eye towards what do I want my eternity to be? I don't want to live my life, or I shouldn't live my life with what's good for me right here, right now. That's not a Torah. That's not a Jewish way of thinking. We always keep our eyes a little bit further down the road. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us this. Ha'olam hazeh, this world, is a prozdor. It's a entranceway. La'olam haba. Right? We always talk about this concept of where this world is an entry point to get to Olam Haba. But the idea is that how do I live it now with an eye towards the future? So the truth is, it gets even better because, where do we have this? Give me one second. I didn't want to lose the place. Right. This is what we were saying earlier, that when Yosef not only interprets the dreams, he gives Paro the advice of what kind of person he needs to hire. And the words he used, ve'ata, now, yirei Paro, Paro should see to it, ish, a man, navon v'chacham. Navon means has bina, has insight, wisdom, v'chacham, and is a wise person. That's the person, v'shiseo el Eretz Mitzrayim, that's who you should appoint over all of Egypt. And the next thing you know, Paro appoints whom? Yosef himself. Become prime minister. Because he understood that for this plan to work, Yosef is right. You have to be able to see a little bit past. So the first part of this message, the first part of this lesson is, as Jews, we have to learn to live not just for the here and now, but with an eye towards the future. Now, the truth is, it gets even better because there are those that interpret this a little bit differently. You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Mishnah, which again in Pirkei Avos, says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five primary students. And he says to them, Se'u uru'u, go out and see what is the proper path, what's the right trait. If you want to pick one trait that should be your guidepost for life, he asks each one of his five students what it should be. One of them answers, Lev Tov. Always have a good heart. Meaning, you should be kind, you should be flexible, you should be considerate. Lev Tov, a good heart. Another one responds, Ayin Tov. Have a good eye. See the positive in people. Go on and on. One of them says, our phrase, Roa es hanolad, to see the future, meaning to see what the implications and consequences of our actions. The Mishnah continues, and he turns the question on the flip side, does a 180. He says, what's a bad trait that a person needs to stay away from? So each one really says the opposite of what they said. The one who said Lev Tov, a good heart, he responds by saying Lev Ra. You have a bad heart. The one who said Ayin Tov, a good eye, he says Ayin Ra. He says a bad eye. Let's go to our guy, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one who said the positive trait is to see the consequences of your actions. What's the negative? Eddie, what would you choose as the flip, the negative trait, the opposite of keeping the consequences of your action in mind? What would you choose? Yeah, the opposite.
I would say that basically the opposite of my action would be the consequence that I have.
Yeah, but what's the trait? What is it that I should stay away from? You can say it just in the not considering the consequences of your actions, but he doesn't do that. He picks
no,
up
I,
very specific.
I would want to stay with me. I'd stay away from the bad people.
But that's not the opposite of the consequences of your actions.
YOLO.
Yellow?
YOLO. You only live once. It's live in the here and now.
YOLO. YOLO have to do with this. YOLO, yeah. You only live once. That kind. But it's interesting. He doesn't phrase it that way. Anybody know what he actually says? Anybody remember this Mishnah? I'm only holding it to you. We learned it 20 years ago. He says the opposite is love the eno mishalim. Somebody who borrows money and doesn't repay it.
Oh, we talked about that.
Really? That's the opposite? Love the eno mishalim. He borrows and he doesn't repay. Now, you can using my Yiddish word, you can finagle it to make it fit, and you can say, well, that's true, because somebody who borrows and doesn't repay, he's not seeing the implications, and he's the consequences. No one's ever going to lend the money again, and he's really royally screwed for who knows how long. You can say that. But why didn't he phrase it in a way of not choosing one specific example? Just say the opposite is never considering the applications using Susan. Let him just say YOLO. You only live once. That's a great way to phrase it. And it encompasses so much more than just the unique one specific case of borrowing and not paying back. Brad, you hear the question?
I was thinking about something else. Not exactly.
Should I repeat? Well,
what was the question?
Okay. Reb Shimon, you see, I know my players. Shimon, Reb Shimon says the positive trait is Roa es hanolad, someone who sees the implications and considers the consequences. What's the negative trait, the opposite of that? I would have expected to hear, you don't consider the consequences. You live for the here and now. You only live once. But that's not what he says. He says the opposite is the guy who borrows money and doesn't pay it back. Why are you being so specific? You hear the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's making a statement. I don't hear the question. You mean he borrows money?
I'm asking a question. Why does he choose that as one example as the opposite trait? To me, choose a much more generalized trait of don't consider the consequences of your actions and live for the here and now. That's what I would have expected him to say.
Well, this is a matter of a debt. It's not like negative consequences. Somebody, you know, not paying a debt back.
So you're making my question even stronger. It doesn't even seem to be the opposite of what he said is the positive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a specific example of somebody that
right.
doesn't care or didn't consider the consequence of not
right.
paying back.
That is exactly my question on that
mission. I have a question. Rabbi Shimon and this Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, did they live in the time
of students?
Was Yehudit the daughter of Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Did he live in the time of Hanukkah?
No. No.
No?
Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? No.
Okay. What?
No. I don't think so.
Okay. Is he a...
No, that's too... No.
I heard a eulogy today for Lois Rubin, and Rabbi Kalman talked about Yehudit. She was a hero in Hanukkah. She killed a Syrian Greek general. Her
yeah,
father...
That's at the time of the Greeks. That was Yochanan Kohen Gadol.
Okay.
Yo's father.
Okay.
We're going to talk about that. Hold on to that thought. Not okay. Yehudit, but that idea. You'll see in 1 second. Listen to...
I have a comment for...
Yeah, go ahead.
What you're asking. So if you're saying the opposite of performing an action, say it again about the consequences. Just so as Brad was talking, I forgot exactly how I was going to phrase it. Your question.
The positive trait, he uses the phrase haroa et hanolad, one who sees the ramifications and consequences of his actions, versus... borrows and doesn't pay back.
So someone borrows but doesn't pay back. It makes me think of a ganav more than somebody who borrows. I mean, somebody who borrows doesn't steal, but I think that when you don't realize the consequences, you don't act in a moral and ethical way. And I think that consequences, is including laws, are what keep us living moral and ethical lives.
Okay, I buy that. You're right. But if you were going to write this Mishnah, would you have chosen such a specific example? Or you, like me, given that's what he says, I'm going to, you know, squeeze it to make it fit. It sounds like we're trying hard to make it work.
Okay.
So I heard something years ago and I loved it. I made a note of it. And before the class, I'm ripping apart my bookcases because I cannot remember where I saw it, but I remember the thought. Here's what it is. I probably have about, I don't know, 25, 30 books on my table now because ripping through them because I couldn't find it. Here's the thought. You know, I'm going to translate the words almost literally. Who is considered wise? Haroah, someone who sees, et hanolad, that which is born. So we've translated it so far as he sees what's born from his actions going forward. But what if we looked at it a little differently? What if I translated it as, you know who a wise person really is? Who sees himself that he is born. What does that mean? Means you had a past. You have a history. You have parents, grandparents. You didn't just show up on the scene as if you were the first person on earth. You realize you are the recipient. You are the beneficiary. You are born from previous generations and you are fortunate to be growing up on their shoulders. What they did prior to you, if you keep that in mind, you keep that in mind in the sense of, I recognize I am born. That means someone came before me. There's a tradition. There's something that was given to me that came before me. That is on the opposite end of a spectrum of somebody who is love ve'eno mishalim, somebody who borrows and doesn't pay. What does that mean? The person looks at themselves as, oh, look, I received something. Great, done. There's nothing more. There's no concept of paying it forward, no recognition that it came from somewhere and that it has to be connected to where it came from. The person looks at themselves as completely independent and separate from what came before. That's a whole nother world of living. The Chacham, the truly wise person, says, I wasn't just born out of nowhere, right? I know in a philosophical, theological sense, we don't believe in the Immaculate Conception. You got to have a start. There's got to be someone that came before you. By the way, happy Christmas, right? We go ahead and we have a beginning. There's a Mesorah. There's a tradition from which we came. That's a Chacham. He sees that he is a Nolad. He is born into something. As opposed to somebody who is Loveh. Oh, look, money came to me. Great. It's mine. No idea of connecting back to where it came from and no concept of paying it forward to keep it going. That is the philosophy that says it's all about me and it's all about here and now. They are diametrically opposite of each other. The one who's a chacham sees himself as part of a chain. He's part of a tradition. It came to me and it's my responsibility to keep it going. That's somebody who's a chacham. He sees that he came from somewhere and has to go somewhere. Eyes are a little bit in the back and in the front, as opposed to the guy who borrowed from someone, isn't interested in paying it back and no interest in letting it go forward. That is the two aspects of what's going on in these dreams. Yosef is trying to impress upon Paro that for a future, for a country that's going to face challenges, you need two aspects. Number one, your eyes have to be looking forward. During the years of plenty, you have to have your eye on the years of famine and deal with it accordingly. But Yosef adds, and that's really our perspective, in that it didn't happen on its own. Where did it come from? How do we connect with this? Why is this so significant? I want to tell you, it's amazing. Because some of you may have been in shul last Shabbos, and there's a certain cantillation, a trup, that's unique. It's called a shalsheles. Anybody know what that is? It's a very strange part of the laning, of the reading of the Torah. It only happens, I think, three times in all of the book of Bereishis. It's a goes up three times, once, twice, three times, pause, and then you move on. It's called a shalsheles. What's up with it? So Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs of blessed memory, he talks about this and he says, what's going on? A shalsheles is this tune of going up and down, up and down, up and down, three times. It's sense of struggling to move forward to the next level or to the next note. You're at a crossroads. You're at a critical point. It's a decision that needs to be made. What am I going to do? I'm hesitant. This is a critical decision. What do I do? What are the three cases in all of Genesis, in the book of Bereishis, where this tune is found, this trup? The first time is Eliezer. Eliezer, the faithful servant of Avraham, is sent to find a wife for Yitzchak. Our sages tell us he was hesitant to go. Why? Eliezer had a little vested interest. Anybody remember?
Yeah. He wanted to marry his daughter.
What?
He wanted to marry his daughter.
Yes, Eliezer had a daughter. Eliezer had a daughter, and he was hoping that Avram would allow his son Yitzchak to marry Eliezer's daughter. So he's hesitant. He's at a certain crossroads. I'm uncertain before I can go accomplish this mission you're sending me on. I would really rather. There's a hesitation. He's at a crossroads. What do? I want to forward this proposal, right? Avraham, I have a great shidduch for your son. She comes from a lovely family. You know her parents very, very well. Wink, wink. Right? He's hesitant. Where's the second time? Is with Lot, Avram's nephew. The angels are trying to escort him and his family out of Sodom and Amorah, and he hesitates. By Yismama. I can't go. He's having an identity crisis at this moment. On the one hand, wants to be like Avraham. In many ways, he is. He offers hospitality. He provides kindness. He's willing to even put himself out to protect his guests, very much like Avraham. But on the other hand, he likes being wealthy in Sodom and Amorah. He loves this lifestyle, living a good life, a high society. He's considered one of the leaders of Sodom. He's at a crossroads. He's hesitant. I really want to be like Avraham, but I love this life. It's hard for me to change that, but I know, but he's hesitant. And here's the third, the one that pertains most to us, is where Yosef is tempted to sin with Ashes Potiphar, with Potiphar's wife. He's struggling. He's struggling to overcome, not to succumb to his physical desires. He's at a crossroads. Oh, it's just a one-night stand. What difference does it make? Are you kidding me? Yosef says to himself, the entire moral, my whole moral makeup is at stake here. Oh, it's not just a temporary, moment of insanity. Everything about my essence is, but on the other hand, she's really pushing hard for this. I'm sure she was a good-looking woman. I'm sure this was not an easy test. Shalsheles is that tune that draws our attention to say, this is a key moment. So the question that becomes is, so how do you know where to turn? How do you know what the right answer is? What should they do in those circumstances? So you have to know there's a second definition of this word, shalsheles. Shalsheles, anybody know the modern Hebrew word, what it means? A shalsheles is a chain, like a chain link fence. Shalsheles is a chain, a long line of links that span generations. It's called a shalsheles. We're ever confused. We're ever unsure of what the right thing to do. We hesitate. What is the right thing? What is my essence? What should I do? The answer is look to our shalsheles. Look to our tradition. Look back from where we came. Yes, it's true. The first half of what I'm talking about is looking forward. Don't live for the here and now, but that has a secondary part. Don't live for the here and now because there's a history. We come from great stock, ladies and gentlemen. We come from people that set the example. The fact that we are Jews today in 2023, we owe a debt of gratitude to those that busted their butts to make sure we are. We didn't come out of nowhere. You know the Chacham? He sees himself as a nolad. I was born. This came from somewhere. I come from a shalsheles. I come from a long chain. That's how we get our guidance. Families that come from a long, long line of dedicated people, people willing to sacrifice for Torah, for being Jewish, having an identity as Jews. It was so easy, and it is still very easy to give it up. Go ahead, or if you want to say something. I can't hear you.
You spoke too far.
Oh, say it again. I missed the beginning.
Joseph and Mrs. Potiphar, at that moment when it was either stay or go, didn't he see the vision of his chain? He saw Jacob.
Exactly. Okay. Rashi quotes that midrash that Yosef was about ready to give in, and he got a vision of his father saying to him, Joseph, you will be excluded if you go ahead with this. You are going to sever your ties to what will become the Jewish nation. You will forfeit your place in all of this. Stay with the program. It's hard. I recognize it. But you come from good stock. That's exactly right, Irv. If you think about it, that's really the essence of what we just celebrated with Hanukkah. That's the message. When we read in Alah Nisim, and Brad, this is to your point. When we introduce Alah Nisim and we tell the story, we say, Bimei Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Chashmonoi Uvanav. Remember that? That's what we say in the Shmona Esrei. That's what we say in benching. But you'll note, Brad, there's three generations listed. It's Matisyahu, Ben Yochanan. So now you have Yochanan as the grandfather, right? His father. Matisyahu is that generation. And we say Chashmonai Ubanav, the Chashmonaim and his sons. You list three generations because that's how we get through this. In fact, some want to suggest that's what the word shalsheles comes from the word shalosh. This is a three-plied cord that is not easily broken. When you have one string, it can break. Even two strings that are braided, stronger than one, but breakable. A three-plied cord, that's hard to break. Shalsheles is the three generations. Yochanan, Matisyahu, Ubanav, and all of his sons. Not only that, what's the baseline mitzvah for lighting Hanukkah candles? I think we talked about this. If a person doesn't have enough oil or a person doesn't have enough candles, what is the absolute bare minimum that he has to light?
One.
One candle every night. That's it. Eight candles total. For all 8 nights. Okay? Forget the shamash. 8 candles. Do you know what the Talmud calls that? What is the baseline mitzvah? Come on, Mark, you know this. The basic mitzvah is called Ner Ish Ubeito. A candle for a man and his entire household. Isn't that interesting? The category of baseline mitzvah of Hanukkah is family. That's the terminology that the Talmud uses to describe the baseline essence of the mitzvah of Hanukkah. What is it? The centrality of family. traditions that come from generation to generations. I have wonderful memories of lighting menorah with my grandparents. The wonderful, wonderful memory that I was very fortunate to have. You know, I'm hopeful that my grandkids will look back and say, I remember lighting with Zaidi. It's a beautiful thing because it's at the heart of what the Jewish people is, this constant passing down the chain from generation to generation. Hanukkah is from the word chinuch. Chinuch means education. That's what it means. We go up in like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says we start with one and we go all the way up to eight. Right, Jim? What's the message? Because we go up in numbers because we are counting the days that have passed. One day has passed. 2 days have passed. Three, four, five. We go up that way because, again, we have an eye not just to the future, but also to the past. When we light the candles, we say 3 days have already gone by. There's a tradition. Yes, we have no future unless the past is carried forward. And yes, we light the new candle first because we do live in the present, but we must always rekindle the previous ones together with it so that we join past, present with an eye to the future. That's the chain we create. This, I believe, is what Rav Birnbaum is trying to suggest. And that is why is what is so significant. We asked two basic questions when we started tonight. Number one, what was Pharaoh so wowed by Joseph's interpretation? It seems relatively simple. Fat cows are good years. Skinny cows are bad years. Okay, I mean, what's he so shocked about? Number one. And number two, how do you reconcile that they were at the same time? And Joseph doesn't give that answer. He says one after the other. The answer we're giving is that Joseph is teaching this concept of having your eyes forward on in the now, in the here, with an eye towards the future. And I'm adding to it is that from a Torah perspective, we also add that we have our eyes to the back. That's the way we live. We live in the here and now, and we have to, but we always have our eyes towards the front as well as eyes to the back. That's the greatness of being part of a shalshelas, of being part of a chain that allows us to reinforce who we are as a people. And I reiterate this, what I said the other day, when I went to that rally in DC, that's the message that came across. We all said we are part of a people. This one's at this point in their journey. This one's at this point in their journey. But the eyes were always, what's the future for the Jewish people? We stand together as one and we come from one past. We have one history and we stand together in that history. That was the message. And that is the constant message that I think needs to get reinforced because it's a tough world out there. It's very, very scary. Of what we're hearing nonstop from around the world. People who are questioning our history, questioning whether we have rights to things. We cannot falter. We have to do what we need to do for now with an eye towards the future and an appreciation of what was in the past. That's my message in terms of Joseph's interpretation. What do you think of that? It's very different. I had never heard it exactly like this, but I thought it was a great message. What do you think?
Joseph was in the chain, and the woman was trying to seduce him and stuff. Couldn't he just like he had morals? Didn't he have morals that he didn't want to do it because he knew whose wife it was?
Well, yes, that is. But as Irv correctly pointed out, it's hard when you're facing that struggle. Yes, intellectually, he knew this was wrong, but he's got a physical body. I mean, I don't have to paint a picture here. It's not hard to imagine a guy out on business who's going to know, and this beautiful girl makes advancements. I'm not suggesting, God forbid, that anyone do this, but we can understand the struggle. And even though intellectually you understand how wrong it is, but we're human. And it plays to the physical desires until, as Irv said, he got this vision and his father, and he says, well, I can't do something like this. I'm part of a tradition that of morals and values. I can't do this, even though I want to. I can't. I won't. And he had to run out. And notice, if we were in his position and we were thrown into jail, how many of us would say, the hell with all of this? Ah, stupid me. Look what, I made the right decision and I'm still getting patched for it. Yeah? I don't know about you, but it will cross my mind. I'll be honest. Right? We can't look at it that way. Whatever, it's a whole long story about it. You can't do it that way. You have to stand your moral ground come what may. I'm not going to budge. What's right is right.
This is a Yetzer Hara thing, right?
It is. She was the Yetzer Hara. This was a test for him. And he's not. And he said, I'm struggling. That's why the tune is a shalsheles. He's hesitant. I'm torn. My physicality is encouraging me. Go ahead. Not a big deal. But his neshama is screaming at him, don't do it. He's hesitant. Huh?
We all have that.
Yeah. That's why we read these stories, Brad. These are not the stories. These are these. I talked about this all the time. The book of Bereishis has only 3 mitzvos in it. Of 613, there's only 3 in the entire book. What are we reading? Just stories. I once had somebody said to me, Rabbi, that's not a problem. That's not a question. Whenever you read a good novel, it starts with a great beginning and it really draws you in with a plot and this, but it really is just a background. The Torah does the same thing. It gives you all these stories. And then when you're not paying attention, it says, oh, by the way, I have 613 commandments. I said, no, that's not what it means. The reason why we have the book of Bereishis is because we have case examples of people failing and succeeding in life. Facing challenges, siblings who don't get along, one who wants to kill the other. You have issues between husbands and wives. You have infertility. You have infidelity. You have murder. You name it. All of human society is in the book of Genesis. And we're supposed to read the stories, not talk about the history. They're talking about us. The human being has not changed in 5,000 years. The outer trappings may have changed. The intensity of certain things have changed. But we have not changed one bit. We are still facing the same challenges that we've always faced. But the Yetzer Hara is not stupid. The Yetzer Hara knows what buttons to push for us. And each one of us, it's custom made. Yeah, but that's why we read these stories of Bereishis, because we're supposed to learn about character development. That's what it's all about. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, the way of living, the practicing of Midos Tovos, of good character, is a prerequisite to the mitzvos in the Torah. That's the basics. Do you know there's not one mitzvah of the 613, there's a commandment, there's no such thing as a commandment to improve your character. You'd think that would be like within the top 10. Because that's the mission, to be a better person, to be a better Jew, and to be more spiritual, and blah, blah, blah. There is no such mitzvah. Really, Rabbi? Are you sure? Did you read this carefully? Yes, I read it carefully. There is no mitzvah called improving your character. Why? Because it's a prerequisite. That's called life. I'll give you mitzvahs so that you know how to guide yourself. But it's all about improving yourself. You read stories in the book of Bereishis, how people succeed or fail. Any other thoughts, comments, ideas? Who wants a rebuttal? No? Okay.
Rabbi, yes. 2 weeks is 2 weeks is New Year's Eve.
We're going to party.
I thought you could come here and we could do it live and have a party. And
I'm actually going to be out of town.
Cincinnati will come to you.
No, I'm actually going to be in Arizona.
It'd be warm weather.
Yes, I'm counting on that. Yeah, so it looks like we'll have to skip until the 14th. I have a wedding on the 7th.
Okay.
Oh, tough number.
We're gonna have to skip. We're gonna have to skip.
Yeah.
One second. Is there any way today's the 24th?
You can't do Air of Christmas.
No, I'm leading one of my teen trips. We were supposed to go to Israel. This was my Israel year. But we can't.
Right.
So we're pivoting, and we're going out west to Arizona for a week, and we leave this Saturday night. So Sunday the 24th, I'm already in out there, and I don't come back until the 1st. So 24th and 31st, they're going to be hard to do.
And it's a 3-hour difference.
Yeah. Right. So 6 o'clock, and while I'm trying to wrestle down 40 teenagers, Rabbi, I'm leaving for an hour. I got to go teach. Like,
hey, you guys want to come to my class, right? I'm putting on a class. You guys got to come listen.
All right. So my apologies, but I think we'll just have to skip one round and meet on the 14th.
That's good. That's good.
That works. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.